Welcome to Social Geek Radio, brought to you by Social Joey and Deb Evans Consulting. Here is your host, Jack Munson.
Glittering prizes and endless compromises, not on Social Geek Radio. Welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. Kind of a special version of Social Geek Radio. Jack Munson here live at the Canadian Franchise Association in Ottawa, Canada. Beautiful Ottawa. Never been here before. What a fantastic city. And joining me via the phone line is my good friend Jim Buckley. What's going on there, Jim?
Morning, Jack. I'm actually in Chicago today.
There you go. You could be at the Social Geek Studios in Chicago while I'm here. So
I could indeed.
So tell Chicago I miss it and I will see it very soon. Interesting, at the Canadian Franchise Association convention here this week, there are, I would say 400 to 500 delegates from all aspects of franchising, from Canada and several people from the U.S. And interesting that the biggest topic of conversation, Jim, as you might guess here this week, is Facebook. And everyone's still talking about the Facebook data issues that we were discussing last week on Social Geek Radio, and everyone asking, what should they do? I just found it interesting that this has sort of gone way beyond the typical marketing geek discussions that you and I have with some of our colleagues, and you know, even people who are deep in franchise sales and operations and even HR. It's really sort of the biggest topic of business these days, and I think it will be for a while, don't you think?
I do, and I think, you know, it's interesting because just in the last few days, there is a continued kind of litany of content being produced. In fact, I had one piece, which I'll tag you on Twitter later today, in Wired magazine, that talks about, hey, you can have Facebook, you know, can download your data, right, and tell you what they've got on you, but then now the disclosures are coming that say, oh, well, we didn't include X, Y, and Z in that download file. So right. Now it becomes it's now kind of what I would call a secondary disclosure issue, which is, not only have we created a circumstance where there's an expectation that they have all this data, but now secondarily, they're not necessarily disclosing it all at once. So I think, to your point, I don't think we've seen the end of this. And I think, you know, trying to control people's panic on the advertising side is going to continue to be an interesting challenge.
Yeah, and the one thing I haven't heard from any of these folks while they're asking about this from a marketer's standpoint, I haven't heard any of them say, personally, I'm getting off of Facebook. I have not heard a single person at this event or any of the conferences I went to in the past couple of weeks. No one's saying that. I think there was sort of an initial outpouring of, okay, I'm done with Facebook. But I think, you know, long term, we may see that Facebook handled this the right way, and they haven't angered as many people as we maybe initially thought. And I don't really see an exodus from Facebook. Do you?
No, and I'll even tell you, Jack, I think the other part of it is that what it really proves for me, now granted, I'm a technologist and I love this stuff, but I think the other part that's fascinating to me is it proved its value. Right.
Yeah.
I think if Facebook had not had inherent value to the actual user, this kind of a situation may very well have been devastating. But I think the fact that over time, dependence probably too short, but I think it'll become reliant on it in terms of how we connect people and the kinds of connections we're able to maintain that way. And as a result of that, we knew there was a price we were paying. I think maybe people are uncomfortable with how large the price ended up being, but taken in the context of, you know, what do I get versus what am I giving up? I think the vast majority of people have said, yeah, okay, I'm willing to pay that price.
Yeah. And I think a lot of those people who never really thought of the targeting aspect of social media advertising, now they now they kind of get it, right? I think there's been such a, there's so many people who consider targeting on Facebook or other places as being, well, yeah, you target Texas, right? Or you target Florida, but they never realized how deep and complex the targeting in social media could be. And now I think that's something that everybody gets. And, you know, so it's actually made some of these conversations about the value of Facebook advertising a little bit easier. This morning at the Canadian Franchise Association, we were doing some roundtables about digital marketing and about finding new franchisees. And that was something that everyone at the table totally gets, that you can target, you know, very specific activities and people, and, you know, it's way beyond location and demographics. And I think a few weeks ago, we may have had to explain that a little deeper. So I think they kind of get it now. So strange enough, but this could actually be a good thing for the advertising industry and Facebook specifically.
No, I totally agree.
So along the same lines, one of the things that I was really interested to speak with you about today is this idea of what's feeding your brain. There's so much stuff out there when it comes to marketing, technology, you know, the industries that we're in and surrounding industries. And you are probably one of the biggest consumers of good information that I know. I know you read a ton of stuff every day. You share a lot. You send me a lot of stuff. So I really wanted to pick your brain a little bit about what's feeding your brain. What's sort of your first go-to for information when you wake up in the morning? What's the first place you look to see what's new?
So I use a product called Flipboard and have for, gosh, I want to say 4 or 5 years. But what I want to start with to answer your question is kind of the context around which I consume information. So I'm a big fan of a guy named Eli Pariser, and I sent you some stuff on him yesterday. And yes. Eli, in 2014, gave a TED Talk around this concept of filter bubbles. And what struck me was the fact that most of the content algorithms, when we do search and those kinds of things, are designed around giving us the most pertinent information possible. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, one of the things I've attempted to do in kind of my own content consumption approach is to remove myself from that. And so what Flipboard has allowed me to do is create kind of my own content setup, if you will. It's not subjected to search. I've made the choices around those people that I'm going to follow every day. And the other part that I've done, and in the context of the world that we live in today, I ignore people's political affiliation as it relates to the content I work with.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that there are a number of people, I'm not going to mention them today or probably ever, but there are a number of people that I follow who I am not politically aligned with. Well, that doesn't make any difference to me. And I think that helps me kind of step away from the filter bubble, meaning that I'm able to create a circumstance where I can actually interact with great content without having it colored by other things that are kind of external to my own beliefs. Mm-hmm. So in terms of kind of where I start my day, so I don't subscribe to a lot of newsletters. I do subscribe to one called Street Fight Daily, which I really like. And that's to get to that one. .com. That is about the only newsletter that I go to.
Give me that website again. I think we dropped out there for a second.
Yeah, that's okay. It's streetfightmag.com.
Streetfightmag.com. Cool.
And so I've been a subscriber to that one for an extended period of time. They publish 5 days a week. It's called Street Fight Daily. And they typically bring, the thing I like about them is they have a number of different content resources, right? So for instance, this morning's contains content from the New York Times, from Recode, from the Wall Street Journal, from CNN.com, Media Post, and Adweek. And so that gives you some context, right, in terms of the number of different resources. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I move to the Twitter feed of a group of people that I follow pretty aggressively. The kind of the two kind of starting points of my day are Ted Rubin. Ted is probably, I consider to be one of my mentors, and Ted is considered to be the most followed chief marketing officer on Twitter, and it's at Ted Rubin. And then the second one is on the opposite end of, so Ted is a couple years older than I am. And then to look at the millennial side of it, I follow Brian Fanzo, and his Twitter handle is iSocialFans. And what's interesting is that they know each other. So, and Jack, we've talked about this before, there are, in a lot of cases, there are people that they're sharing each other's content. So you feel like, oh, do I really need to follow both of these people? And my argument is that they come at it, they come at their kind of approach from a very different perspective. And so what I typically do, well, in the first hour or two, like this morning, it was when I was working out on my treadmill, I spend an hour to 90 minutes just immersing myself in the content of these other really smart people. Mm-hmm. And I think what it's done for me is it gives me the opportunity, you know, I'm obviously running sales calls here in Chicago the rest of the day, and it gives me real pertinent, actionable information where I can say to somebody, hey, something you might want to look at is XYZ, because we obviously live in an era now where selling people anything isn't, nobody wants that anymore.
Right.
They want to be, you know, obviously I'm a, as you know, I'm a Vaynerchuk fanatic. And, you know, the thing Gary talks about is give. So by the time you ask for the order or you ask for something, whatever that might be, you've given them enough value to be able to do that. And I think the other part that's been fascinating for me over the years, I've followed Ted in particular. We've met three times in person. I think probably more, Jack, than you and I have actually met in person.
Yeah, I think so.
But what's interesting about it is that when you're interacting with people online and you're not constantly selling them something or attempting to get them to do something for you, and it's simply, hey, this is great content and they're doing a great job, the interactivity that you have with those people is incredibly enhancing to what you can learn about what goes on in these spaces. And I think the more of those people, in my particular case, I have 3, 7, 8, 9, 10, around 11 or 12 people that I really focus on any given day. One of them happens to be Hillel Fold, who's really considered to be, I would say probably the top blogger in all of Israel as it relates to technology. Mm. Not somebody that I would necessarily have interacted with for any particular business reason, but because of the quality of the content that he produces, you're in a situation where every day you go back to his feed because it's good stuff. And I think that's the other part of it for me is I'm a Twitter user, and I find it fascinating, you know, that the death of Twitter has been reported repeatedly and often over the course of the last couple of years.
Yeah,
so that was a really long kind of answer to your question.
Twitter's totally dying. I've only been on it, you know, 7 or 8 times in the past 4 hours. So it's totally dying.
Right. Exactly.
But
I
use Twitter.
That's where I start.
Yeah. You use Twitter a lot like I use Twitter with, you know, really as sort of a warehouse or a vault for stuff you're reading, stuff you're liking, stuff you want to share with someone else. And, you know, if you think of it that way and you go to Twitter and search for Ted Rubin or search for whatever topic, you're going to see stuff that you want to see, read, save, share. You know, to me, the social engagement aspect of it, I think you could make a argument that, yeah, it's pretty dead there. But, you know, I consider it it's like the YouTube of links, right? You can go find anything you want. If there's any article out there, you can find it pretty easily on Twitter without having to, you know, go through, you know, thousands of Google results. So yeah, it's
no, we're not. And well, and this, okay. And that's a perfect example because it goes back to what we talked about kind of from a construct perspective at the beginning, which is if I'm having to go search for something, I may or may not get the results that I want.
Yeah.
Right. Because Google looks at my online behavior, et cetera. When I go to Twitter, I probably am, right? Twitter's probably got other things going on. But at the same time, I know, okay, there's a group of people who, if I'm looking for really thoughtful content around a particular issue, right? If I'm going to think about PR, Jeff Hazlett and Tallgrass PR are probably the go-to people on planet Earth for what they might want to think about this, right? Or what I, you know, what could instruct my thinking around it. And so I think that's the other part of my content strategy. And to your point about, you know, the question about what's feeding your brain, I think the more disparate people we can interact with on any given day, and this goes not only just in terms of technical content or marketing content, but just in terms of the content I think we as thinking, living humans consume, I think it's important to kind of steep yourself in a variety of different platforms and a variety of different content types, because if you don't do that, you're selling yourself short and you're going to end up I've seen it called all kinds of things, but I think what I heard it called last evening on the news was, you know, an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And I think when fortunately, certainly in the States, we've gotten to the point where we really don't want to listen to other people. And I think that flies in the face of the power of the web, as far as I'm concerned. And I think secondarily, we're less, this sounds ridiculously broad, but we're less as a species because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you get out of that echo chamber, you're going to discover things that, you know, people from your circle just have not even talked about yet. And maybe it's due to politics or maybe it's due to, you know, some other cultural aspect, but you're really doing yourself a disservice by not looking outside once in a while. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying about ignoring the politics when we're looking at all of this great stuff from marketers and advertisers and technologists. Even the politics of someone with whom I agree, I really don't want my two worlds of marketing and politics to mix when I'm reading in the morning. I really don't, because it, like you said, it totally taints how you perceive something that someone's saying. And it, as well as, even if I agree with them, right? I don't want to be part of that. But I really find fault with a few technologists, one of whom I won't name. He's been a guest on this show, and I hope he will be again soon. But I've been very disappointed in the past, you know, since the 2016 election, because he's a brilliant guy. And instead of talking about the things that he's very brilliant about or on, he spends 90% of his time blogging and posting and putting things up on LinkedIn about the president of the United States. And it's like, you know, if I want that, I can go to cable news, right? I can go to a million political blogs that are either for or against the current president, and I can read that all day. I want good technology stories and information from this particular writer, and he's like, he's just spending all day talking politics, and I feel a little cheated, right? So I want to avoid all of that stuff. When it comes to some of the folks that you mentioned, the thing that stood out to me that I also need when I read stuff from these guys is it has to be well written, right? There are so many bloggers that I'll read and it's like, that's a really great idea, but wow, what a terrible writer. And I get a little stuck, just like if it turns political, if it's poorly written, I get stuck on it. And then I, you know, you kind of dismiss some of their ideas. So when you're talking about Ted Rubin and some of the others, it's like, you know, there's, you know, he's a terrific writer on top of being a really smart guy. He puts his thoughts together so beautifully on the page that it's good stuff to read and it's a pleasure to read it. So, you know, I don't want to sound like a high school English teacher here, but if it's not written well, I really can't go back to it very often.
Well, and I think to finish that thought, Jack, I think the other interesting part of that is that because we'll use Brian Fanzo as an example, I mean, Brian is probably one of the top folks in all of streaming media in the country. That's Jim Buckley's personal opinion, but I think he's that good. And I think one of the things he does is, even if he's doing a live stream, it's incredibly thoughtful and it's well constructed and it's put together effectively. And so when I go to his stream and I see him posting someone else's content, I know in some respects it's got Brian's seal of approval, right? So I know that, hey, if I put this in my stream and I share a piece of content, it's got, you know, kind of that halo, if you will, and the same thing for Ted. So you've got a
gold star stuff. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you've got people who are incredibly smart and do a great job, but are unable to articulate effectively what they're thinking about. And if they can't, then obviously in this day and age where everything is important, you know, you're going to end up in a circumstance where they aren't necessarily as well thought of as maybe they should be.
Yeah. There's a couple of people who I really look to, not just for their own information, but I guess I've turned into sort of a third level blog reader now, because I'm not actively going out and searching for and finding and reading blogs. I'm letting some really smart people share what they're reading with me. I think the top one, in my opinion right now, is Mitch Joel, who I love his podcast, Six Pixels of Separation. He's doing something now, I think it's called The Long Tales. I know you've shared this a few times as well, where he's basically sharing the stuff that he finds interesting. And to me, it's like, if Mitch Joel thinks it's interesting, I need to pay attention to that, you know, because he's a smart guy. He's been on this podcast as well. And by the way, he's also a handsome devil. So if
you're just saying that because you claim he looks like you, that's all. Not.
Yeah. If anybody isn't quite getting that joke, go to socialgeekradio.com, the about the
you'll
show.
See the proof.
And you'll see that he's not only a handsome devil, but he's a very stylish dresser. I think.
Oh Lord.
I think between the two of us, we probably own, you know, three shirts that are not black, but Mitch does a great podcast and he shares a lot of good stuff on his podcast, as well as this Long Tales project he's doing on LinkedIn now. So check that out. The only newsletter I receive via email anymore, and I used to get how many, right? 100 a week. I've turned them all off because I just don't want the emails. But the one that I still get, because there's always something I like in it, is it's called The Full Monty from Scott Monty. And he does just an incredible amount of stuff in this newsletter. I think he must spend an entire weekend, and I don't know how many people he has helping him with this, but every Monday morning you get the Full Monty newsletter, and it's curated content about digital and marketing and you know, all of these related topics. And there's just so much stuff in here. It's like, how does he find the time to do this? But I mean, it's really, it's just massive. So I always find something good in there. And I got to tell you, the one other thing, the one other media source that I still go to every day, and when I'm traveling like I am today, I love getting the paper copy. I have it right here in my hands right now, is the Wall Street Journal. And not that it's the most advanced thought when it comes to marketing or digital or technology or anything like that. It's really not out there on the edge too much. But the thing about the Wall Street Journal is most of the CEOs that I will be meeting with or having a phone conversation with this week or next week, they're reading the Wall Street Journal today. So I want to know what they're reading as well. So, and it's also kind of my thermometer of, you know, what are people saying, you know, like about the Facebook issue or something like that. So I wouldn't go as far as saying it's pedestrian, right? I mean, it is the Wall Street Journal, but it is a nice way to kind of all be on literally the same page with other people in the industry and clients and brands and CMOs and see what are they seeing, what are they reading. And, you know, you really don't want to, meet with the CEO of a brand and find out that they were mentioned in the Wall Street Journal this morning and you're not aware of it.
Indeed.
And then the one last one that I'll mention, it's fun and, it's something that I've been following for a few years now is, a guy named Tom Fishburne, who does, a cartoon series called The Marketoonist. And, it's sort of like, you know, it's a cartoon for marketing people. What I love about it is not only is he hysterical and he never misses, it's always funny. But it's also sort of like, I consider it sort of like the Saturday Night Live effect for marketing. If he's doing a cartoon about a certain subject, then it's obviously something that people in the marketing world are all talking about and aware of. And again, it's sort of like we're all on the same page. So, you know, he did a brilliant one yesterday about the 5 stages of data privacy grief, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And it was just so spot on. But again, back to our Facebook conversation, this is what everybody's talking about, especially in the marketing world. So if Tom Fishburne is doing a cartoon about it, it's something we need to pay attention to. And you can see that on Facebook, LinkedIn. He shares those cartoons everywhere. I believe it's every once a week. I think it's every Monday. So I think that's my list pretty much. Mitch, Joel, Scott, Monty, The Marketoonist, and The Wall Street Journal. And then on top of that, everything that you, Jim, and some of my other friends share with me on Twitter or other places, that can pretty much feed my brain for a day as well.
Well, and that's the power of it, right? Is that when you create, I think that's the exciting part from my perspective. We talk about the ills of social a lot in this world, but one of the most powerful pieces of it is that regardless of where we are in the world, if we've got people, and I have the same fortune you do, which is I've got a group of people that are really smart and know a lot about this business, and they'll tag you and I on different things. And so you end up in a circumstance where you get to derive the real benefit. And as long as you're willing, I think, to be kind of a lifelong learner, not only in this space, but just in general, I think that's an incredibly powerful way to utilize these platforms effectively and do so in a way that gets away from, I think, a lot of the negative connotations that seem to be bantied around on a constant basis now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good note to end on. Let's keep the conversation going. If you folks have anyone that you follow that you would like to recommend to us to talk about a little further, or you just want to share someone that you follow on Twitter or a blog, I'd love to hear about it. You know, maybe we're missing something out there. So you can tag us on Twitter. I'm at Jack Munson. And Jim, what's your Twitter handle?
at JRBuckley68.
Okay. And you can also tag us on Twitter now at Social Geek Radio. So share with us what you're following. Let us know or throw it up on our Facebook page. That's cool as well. I would love to hear what people are into these days. Jim Buckley, always a pleasure chatting with you, my friend. And we will be back on Social Geek Radio very soon. Until then, safe travels and have a great night.
Same to you, Jack. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Social Geek Radio. Copyright 2018 Social Geek Radio.